Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Friday, October 11th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Melody, TGIF.
Rarely do I appreciate TGIF as much as I do today. It's just been one of those weeks, ladies and gentlemen, and it's just, Dave, it's just, I'm looking forward, even though I got lots of work to do this weekend. TGIF. So yep. Here's a warning, ladies and gentlemen. Those who are listening live, you better call right after 5 o'clock Eastern time, because I think we're going to be closing those doors a little early today. But hey, there's a lot of information, Dave, that's just coming out at the last minute. But first, let's go ahead and do the pricing on gold today. We have some pressure on gold, 1486, down 8. Silver was down most of the day, turned around, was up a penny at 17.59. Platinum was down 4 at 898. And palladium was down 2 at 1704. Pressure on the dollar, 0.41 at 98.29. Crude oil was up 1.25 at 54.80. Paper markets today, oh, yes, now that I get in so much trouble, Dave.
Go ahead and say it.
You know, the Dow spikes as President Trump says the United States and China reach an initial trade agreement. Then I saw it reported as it's the first phase.
Phase
and it's like,
one.
Well, now how to phase one, phase two. To me, that's just a way of, you know, things just aren't going along as swimmingly as what we're being told. And trust me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure there needs to be a trade agreement with China. And it shouldn't be on our daily up and down emotional ride for the past year and a half. It's just one day it's on, one day it's just, to me, it's ridiculous. But they'll do whatever they have to do to keep the market from reacting. So the day they reached that information, it was up almost 500 points, I believe, Dave. Closed at 318 to the upside. The Dow did at 26,815. The NASDAQ was up 106 at 8,057. The S&P was up 32 at 2,970. Who cares about the billions of dollars that are going into the repo market? Who cares about the continuing resolutions that have to be done to keep this funding, this government funding? Who cares about all the important stuff as long as that trade agreement gets done and stock market goes higher? 10-year yield, this is a pop, 0.09 at 1.75%. All the foreign markets were higher. Japan was higher. Hong Kong was up 2.25%. Germany was up almost 3%. They just released the information that the trade agreement was done. So what else is going on, Dave? What would make all those foreign markets go up so strong overnight?
Can't tell you. This is, the only thing, overnight. I mean, that was before, unless there were some signals that the markets got of, this impending partial or mini deal, as it had been called as late as early this morning. The Turkey invasion in northern Syria, that couldn't be helping those markets, and all the other financial news, or most of it, is mediocre at best. So let's tip our hat to another day of volatility and uncertainty.
And you said something there. It's like, unless that the overnight markets got a wind of things, and it's just like, well, gee, I'm sure they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, just think about all this, the money that someone made due to the release of previous information, perhaps, of that this announcement would be done to affect the markets and so forth. So, you know, we can't say it's right in one breath, and then if somebody else does it, we can't say that it's wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. We can't, and that's what bothers me more than anything, Dave, anymore. It's just like if somebody does it, it's okay, but if somebody else does it, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong.
Well, it's, you know, just, excuse my characterization here, ladies and gentlemen, but the fat lady has not sung. I mean, we're reading that, you know, while this quote first phase, you know, has you know, certainly both sides at the table looking very optimistic. You know, this trade deal, this portion of it, has to yet be put to ink, and they say that won't happen for another 3 weeks. So, you know, as they say, the devil's in the details, and a lot of times, you know, these agreement and principles can fall apart, you know, if the two parties, you know, get stymied over some of the language. So, you know, again, I'll believe it when Trump and Xi are, you know, have signed the deal and we're moving on to phase two.
Well, I'll agree to it and be happy when they get the new NAFTA agreement signed and ratified, and then this one gets ratified also. If it takes over a year to get, and yeah, you can blame the Democrats, ladies and gentlemen, you can. But you know, there isn't anything that's working in D.C. You can choose either side; it isn't working because all we're treated to is headlines. And we're treated to all these major headlines, so everybody gets distracted. And, I mean, just yesterday, all the big headlines was President Trump was complaining about all the Fox, the bad Fox publicity that's being said bad things about him. And now Shep Smith is out at Fox. What's going to happen to Judge Napolitano?
Smith is out. Is that that one of the consequences of Attorney General Barr having met with Rupert Murdoch?
Probably.
Isn't that
probably? And so, you know, you don't. It's all the same. It's all the same, ladies and gentlemen. There's no difference. And it doesn't matter whether you like Shep Smith or not. You know, it's. I don't know. It is just amazing. And it's the same way. Headlines. This hasn't been confirmed yet. But Turkey bombs U.S. Special Forces in Syria attack, apparently by mistake. Now, this was released by Newsweek. I don't know. Again, I tried to find it on the news and everything, but everybody's talking about the trade deal. If this is true, what a great way to cover this up. Now, a contingent of U.S. Special Forces has been caught up in Turkish shelling. And of course, Newsweek has learned through both an Iraqi Kurdish intelligence official and senior Pentagon official that the special forces operating on Mashtanur Hill in the majority of Kurdish city of Kobani fell under artillery attack. Of course, the Turkish forces are conducting their so-called Operation Peace Spring against Kurdish fighters. It doesn't say that anybody was, you know, hurt or killed or wounded or anything like that. But I don't know what that means, Dave. I mean, you get a country that bombs special forces, you'd think there should be some sort of something that would follow.
The destruction of the Turkish economy, no doubt.
So, you know, but so I don't know. We had oil prices that surged this morning after the Iranian state media said that two rockets had struck an Iranian tanker traveling through the Red Sea. Brent crude futures were up a little over 2% by 8 a.m., over $60. Not that it was London time. The National Iranian Oil Company said the tanker was hit by two explosions at 5 a.m. and 5:20 a.m. local time. It said the tanker had been traveling through the Red Sea off the coast of Saudi Arabia, 60 miles from the city of Jeddah. State-run IRNA news agency identified the vessel as Sabati and said that the crew was uninjured and were working to stabilize the ship. And it looked like later on that the situation was under control, Dave.
Well, they say the cause of the incident is currently being investigated. Iran's foreign ministry later did confirm that the tanker was hit twice. Commenting on the oil price move, Kalen Birch of The Economist's intelligence unit said that the 2% move higher is still fairly moderate, adding that the two factors are probably helping to avoid a sharper price increase. He said, and I'm quoting here, economic data in both the U.S. and the EU slowed noticeably in September, confirming that global growth is on a downward trend. And he added, it remains unlikely that limited strikes and or legal contests will spill over into direct military confrontation in the Middle East. No party has anything to gain from such conflict. Well, good luck with that. You know, the incident comes amid heightened tensions there. You know, besides what's going on with Turkey and northern Syria, pre-dawn attacks in Saudi Arabia in the middle of last month hit two of its largest production facilities. That forced the country to shut down temporarily about 50% of Saudi's output. That's more than 5% of the world's daily crude production.
Well, you know, the following trading day, of course, the international benchmark Brent crude rose as much as almost 20%, $71.95 per barrel at the open. And, of course, this was the biggest jump on record. And we know that the Yemen's Houthi rebels have been at war with the Saudis since 2015. And so it's, I don't know, there's a lot of tension in those areas. And, you know, it doesn't take much for something to go wrong, ladies and gentlemen. And
it's a very, very volatile situation. You know, as Melody mentioned, you know, we won't talk too much more about this, but, you know, just a mounting sense of turmoil spreading across that Kurdish-held territory, you know, as the Turkish-led incursion is in its third day now. Literally tens of thousands of civilians are being seen on video fleeing, you know, the bombs, the shooting. The major hospital on the front line has been abandoned. You know, warnings of an imminent revival of ISIS have added to the chaos, and that certainly raises the specter of panic among Kurds who remain in that region. Now, Putin, for what it's worth, said he doubts whether Turkey or Syria had the resources to secure the prison camps holding thousands of Islamic State prisoners. One has to wonder if that's on the up and up, or if, you know, that's intended to panic the civilians that are there, hoping that they flee presumably west rather than south. You know, Kurdish forces that have been allied with the U.S. had been running the prisons, but, you know, they're diverting those soldiers to fight the invasion. So it's ugly right now, ladies and gentlemen. Keep your eyes, to the extent you can't, you know, we will. And we'll be, you know, trying to keep you up to date on this and certainly all other issues and events that affect gold and silver.
Something that I think we talked about this, and, you know, of course, we talk about it almost every day, and we talked about this big number, I think, last week. And we also talk a lot about black swans. And, you know, the black swan is a rare and unpredictable event that's, you know, beyond what's normally expected of a situation and has potentially severe world-changing consequences and, of course, serious implications for investors. If we're talking about those black swans that will affect the markets, and the rate at which black swans are showing up in the world should really truly scare the heck out of people. But we talk about this all the time too. It just seems everyone seems to be lost in this highly complex technology of iPhones and computers and social media to really notice that something is frighteningly wrong. Some listeners may recall the famous scene in the Monty Python movie, The Holy Grail, where a guy is banging a bell and saying, "Bring out your dead." The scene in the movie takes place in England during the Black Plague, and due to the staggering amounts of deaths, carts were used to pick up the bodies throughout the city, Dave.
Yeah, sorry, ladies and gentlemen. No, this is a macabre subject for our program, but here's the point we're trying to make. Death is a tragic and emotional part of life, one that impacts family members, friends, and coworkers. But in this Monty Python scene, there's so much death that virtually everyone becomes numb to it. And that's exactly what we're now seeing, I think, you know, as a whole, in general. There are so many warning signs of black swans out there that no one seems to be taking notice. Everyone has become quite numb to it, in fact. So when the federal government adds $814 billion of new debt in a little more than 2 months, public just yawns and say, it's no big deal. And yet, since the beginning of just August, the total federal debt has increased from $22.023 trillion to $22.837 trillion, an increase of 4% in just a little bit over 2 months.
For the first half of the year, the gross debt remained right around the $22 trillion level. However, after the White House and Congress struck a two-year budget deal on July 22nd, the debt ceiling was raised, and of course, the U.S. debt jumped $291 billion just in 1 day. 1 day! The U.S. has been making up for borrowed funds since the beginning of the year. In the past 2 weeks, the debt jumped another $227 billion. The big spike in $96 billion on September 30th was due to the end of the fiscal year. Regardless of the 2019 U.S. budget deficit rose to $984 billion. That's the highest in 7 years. Jerome Powell, Fed chair, and other mainstream economists have said the government's fiscal course is not sustainable. We've been saying that for 20 years. As a new government fiscal year gets underway, we got to keep our eyes focused on the things that truly matter for our way of life, especially, if you're holding those paper dollars, your retirement accounts, your pension plans. And we'll talk more about that when we come back from our break. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I told you I had a rough week. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and sign up for the weekly newsletter. And I think you have a blog going out today, don't you, Dave?
Yeah, I'll be going out right after the program.
Fantastic, fantastic. But heading into the break, we were just talking about the budget and like no one is paying attention, and we're talking about the black swans, and we were talking about how no one is paying any attention to these because there's just so many distractions, we were talking about as the new government fiscal year gets underway, we kind of keep our eyes focused on things that, matter for our way of life. Government debt, federal government debt only, exceeding our GDP and only getting higher. We're in for the black swan of all black swans. We don't know when, but I think it's going to be sooner than later. And another story, Dave, we're talking about the various areas around the world. And I asked you during the break, is this a new group of troops going to Saudi Arabia? We just sent 10,000, didn't we?
I don't know that they've actually been sent, but that was the announcement. But this was an announcement that came out probably mid-afternoon, our time, that the U.S. is going to send more forces, about 3,000 of them, into Saudi Arabia. And that's coming even as the president says he wants to reduce American military involvement in the Middle East. Defense Secretary Mark Esper ordered the deployment of two more fighter squadrons and accompanying personnel. The U.S. will also deploy Patriot and these terminal high altitude area defense missile defense systems. The move comes again amid rising tensions in the Middle East, sparked in part at least by the president's decision to pull troops from northern Syria, followed quickly by Turkey's invasion of northern Syria. Esper also chastised Turkey for what he calls an impulsive action to start its offensive there.
Well, we often talk about, we hear all the time that wages are rising, people are doing well. Here on this program, we're trying to tell folks, probably not as well as what we're being told. Sure, there's segments and there's people that are doing well, but you also hear in the same breath, they're working harder, longer, and they're not getting ahead at all. And many Americans, Dave, said that they're doing worse than before the 2008 crisis. Is that true?
Well, it is, according to some new work. The Great Recession's been over officially for a decade. Yet for many Americans, as you mentioned, there's little reason to celebrate. According to bankrate.com, it's a personal finance website, many people's finances just haven't recovered from the recession's blows. Mark Hamrick, who's the senior economic analyst there, said there are still tens of millions who are struggling to even get back to where they were before the economy took a turn for the worse. Now, more than half of Americans who were adults during the Great Recession said they endured some type of negative financial impact in this survey. And half of those people, half, say they're doing worse now than before the crisis. Now, as we've reported before, you know, more than half of U.S. households have no emergency savings at all, Melody.
We know 46% of those adults at the time of the recession say they've seen their paychecks grow since before it began. More than a third of those who say they or their partner lost a job during the recession say their pay has actually dropped from before the recession. 71% of those surveyed said they lost money in the stock market, 46% lost value in their home, 24% depleted their emergency savings. The median family income after accounting for inflation was $60,336 in 2017, little different than the $58,544 in 2000. And of course, look at what has happened during that same time frame. Look at the medical costs. Look at the child care costs. Look at the college costs. They have all ballooned in those 17 years, far greater than the increase from $58,000 to $60,000.
Yeah, you know, Hamrick said, you know, despite or whatever, you know, the GDP is, it's a lot lower than, you know, it had been. You know, years ago. And he said how much people have recovered from the crisis has a lot to do with where they live, the sector they work in, and how damaged they were by the recession. Interestingly, and not surprisingly, gender also plays a role. More than a quarter, 27% of women say their overall financial situation is worse today than it was before the recession. That's compared to 19% of men. You know, Hamrick added that, you know, the next big economic slump, which we know is just over the horizon, could be particularly damaging, even devastating. He said, you know, with Americans still digging out from the last recession, even a modest downturn is going to cause further harm to Americans' personal finances.
Yeah, but you know what? It's amazing, though, that you still have consumer sentiment continues to improve. It did this month. The University of Michigan Index of Consumer Sentiment rising to 96 from 93. Everybody was estimating it would be 92. It just kind of goes to show you the out of touch the American people are. And as you stated in the beginning of the program, with the, you know, all these black swans, they just don't see anything coming. And you know what, Dave, there's nothing wrong with optimism. You know, it is good to have confidence, but if it's real, if that confidence is based on reality.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's, you know, the only reality is that people are being conned into thinking that everything is great. And I'm pleased that it's happy for people. You know, those who have benefited, I'm ecstatic for them. I'm glad that, you know, it's great. But when you're talking about half of this country, or what, a third or more, that isn't doing as well, well, consumer sentiment is higher. It just doesn't. It just doesn't
figure.
Make sense, Dave.
Go figure. I don't get it either. You know, and now we're reading, too, that, you know, a large number of Americans are hiding cash in their home.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that all about?
Well, you know, there's an ongoing conversation around if and when the U.S. enters a recession. You know, it's kind of making people make costly mistakes when it comes to their money. 17% of Americans have started hiding cash in their home. And that's according to a new poll from MetLife. And 21% report that they have become more conservative with their money. Well, I don't think so. I mean, I don't see any. To become more conservative with your money, you'd think you'd see some sort of an impact on the stock market. I mean, that's a big number, 21%.
Yeah.
So really, how are they becoming more conservative? Oh, your financial planner is moving out of those high-risk dividend yields into treasuries. Yeah.
Yep. Money market funds.
You know, some of, you know, it's crazy. And these moves are going to cost people a lot of money. And the dollar isn't what it was after 1929 during that depression. At that time, cash was king. Cash is not king in today's world. And the only thing that's going to be king in today's world is going to be gold and silver, because that's real money. During the Depression, yeah, the dollar was real money at that time. Not today. So people are being misled. And I know there's a promoter out there that's telling everybody the gold's going to drop. Oh, who knows where he's at now? All you have to do is look up his history, Wikipedia, and see how many times he was wrong. But he's a big cash hoarder. But what's he selling you, ladies and gentlemen? But so anyway, there's a lot of other people out there who think hiding cash in your house for different reasons than what I'm sure that I believe is wrong. But it can be one of the worst things that people can do, Dave.
Well, think about, just 2-3 years ago, gold's, in the 1100s?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're hovering at 1500, and you've got your $1,000, $10,000, $100,000, you know, under your bed or in, you know, hidden under your floorboards. You know, not only have you missed this valuable appreciation in the value of your asset, but inflation, your purchasing power of that money, when, you know, if and, you know, when you choose, when you need to use it, you know, inflation's eaten away at it. So, you know, if nothing else, leaving, you know, cash lying around, especially a lot of it, just make it really difficult for you to achieve any of your particularly long-term financial goals. Now, go ahead.
And you know what always cracks me up is I hear people, these financial planners who tell people to hold cash. This guy isn't, but a lot do. They tell people, oh, you don't want to own gold because someone can break in your house and steal your gold. Well, what do you think they're going to do with your cash?
Exactly.
You know, they're just trying to pitch whatever product they have to sell you. And so it's just...
Look, again, ladies and gentlemen, we're not certified financial planners, so we're not offering you advice. But it's common sense to think that just a balanced portfolio, spreading out your money, you know, in different types of assets, especially now in gold and silver, just makes so much sense. I mean, it lowers the risk that your entire investment will be wiped out if something happens to, you know, a particular company or industry. So, you know.
And you know what, Dave, something else, I have a lot of customers who that put cash back and then they want to spend it.
Oh, yeah.
Go try to spend $20,000 today in cash. It isn't easy. It's easy if you fill out all the reports and so forth. Yeah, it's no problem. Most people don't want to do that. That's the whole point of why they keep cash. They think that they're, you know, and I do believe you do need to have some cash. Absolutely. You know, you do need to have some cash. But, and I look at 3 months' expenses. And if you're really conservative, yeah, maybe go 4 months, 5 months. But other than that, you should work on paying down your expenses so you don't have to keep that much cash. But, you know, it's...
And keep investing.
You accumulate your gold and silver. That's where your real privacy begins, not with those paper dollars. But
Oh no, I was just going to say, if you don't need your money soon, a precious metals IRA is a great place to invest, especially with all this market volatility. You know, investing should never be about a single moment in time, ladies and gentlemen. It should always be with a look down the road, whether it's going to be for you and your retirement, your heirs and beneficiaries, your church, or whatever, give us a call, 1-800-375-4188.
And it's one thing about the precious metals IRAs, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, if you don't want to get out of paper and you need to have that in there, why keep it in paper? Put some gold and silver in there. And you don't take physical delivery of it. That's one of the risks. But it's there. And there's a couple places out there that'll promote these IRAs where you can take physical delivery of it. Don't buy into that. It's never been tested, unless you want to be the one that hires the attorneys to fight for you when the IRS is knocking on your door, and when you go to turn to the person who sold you that precious metals IRA and said that, you know, if you did it this way, it might be fine as long as no one's tested, but one of these days someone will be. I hope it isn't you. And so I don't know how much you're saving in order to do that. But, and I don't know, Dave, if you open up an LLC, there's annual reporting statements. Most states where you have to report to the state, there's even fees, sometimes taxes on these LLCs that you open up in order to, you know, take physical delivery of your precious metals. So I don't see the benefits. And when these two dealers, I think, across this country, who sets up these precious metals IRAs, and you look at the paperwork, you have more pages of disclaimers than you do of the actual contract for the IRA. I don't understand how that makes anyone feel very comfortable and confident that this is what you should be doing. So, and I've seen people lose. I remember, Dave, I worked with a lady in a bank. Her and her husband were involved in an orange. I mean, it was a legitimate investment in orange groves in Florida. And they were in this thing for like 10 years. Reported on their taxes, blah, 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 blah. I mean, the guy was a big computer programmer, and these were fairly well-to-do folks, intelligent, educated, and so forth.
They sold didn't out hide to, anything. To work the land.
Next thing you know, government comes in and says, nope, you can't deduct that, and this is what you owe.
Oh, my gosh.
And they had to hire attorneys. They had to sell their boats. They had to remortgage their home. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Tell me again tonight.
Each and every heart is food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. It is Friday, October 11th, 2019, and the last segment for today's program. Monday is a holiday. Banks are closed. Post office is closed. I think the markets are partially, I don't know, are they open or closed?
Most are closed, I believe. I'm sorry I didn't look that up before the program started.
Well, shame on you.
I know.
I should have too. But you know what? I should remember from year to year. I just don't anymore.
Frankly, I forgot that Monday was Columbus Day.
Yes, Monday is Columbus Day. And so, I'm not sure if we're going to be doing a replay or not. We had to do a replay yesterday. But if there's enough news from the weekend, we'll be here live. So you're just going to have to tune in anyway. But Dave, tell us, I think this is interesting. You have GM is getting crushed in China. I guess they're getting crushed everywhere. But
yeah, really. You know, the other day you and I talked about how the United Auto Workers strike's been affecting the carmaker General Motors. But today we're reading that GM's getting crushed in China, which is its largest market and by far the largest auto market in the world. You know, the auto industry overall, you know, we've been hearing has been getting hammered by the, you know, the first downturn in modern China based on data going back to the 1990s. The downturn started in mid-2018 and is continuing fairly unabated. So far this year, according to GM, auto sales in China are down 10% from last year. All of 2018 was already down 4% from the peak year in 2017. But this current decline pales compared to how GM is getting crushed and recrushed. In the third quarter of 2019, for example, GM and its joint ventures delivered, almost 690,000 vehicles in China. Again, that was down 18% from the same period last year and down 30% from the same period in 2017 and down 25% from the same period in 2016, Melody.
Are they being punished because of the trade war?
That's a good question. I got to believe that that has something to do with it. I'm forgetting about the application of tariffs to these cars because they're being made jointly by GM, a multinational corporation based in Detroit, but also with China-based companies. So, you know, I don't know. You got to believe that at least indirectly, you know, it's having an effect.
Well, here's my thought too. Although, isn't it true that China buys more agriculture from us than anything?
That's correct. That's correct, and that's interestingly supposedly part of this Phase One agreement that China has agreed to buy even more ag products. I don't know if that means, you know, getting back to the U.S. soybeans. I got to believe it's that and some of the other major products that it had been buying from others.
Well, maybe by Monday there'll be a little more details released on that, and that might be a good thing to cover on Monday's program to see exactly what is in that Phase One.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, but my question was, if China goes along with the, if they go along with making a deal, couldn't they just pull back from purchasing from the U.S.? But on the other hand, if it's ag, they need it, so they couldn't. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, worst case scenario, they could kick GM out saying, hey, we ain't doing business with you anymore. You're not invited. You're not welcome here anymore. I mean, just about 100% of vehicles that GM sells in China are made. They're manufactured there. And, you know, a big part of GM's supply chain, even for its U.S. production, has moved to China. And that's they've been there since, you know, the middle of the financial crisis.
Wow.
So be interesting.
Yeah, this trade disruption, I don't want to call it a war, or these trade negotiations, I think even if they come to an agreement and you can call it a trade deal, there's going to be still a lot of things going on behind the scenes that I think probably both countries would be adjusting to reflect any negative impacts they might have from the deal that they agreed to.
Yeah, I wish I were a fly on that wall. Truly.
Yeah, me too.
bilingual, of course.
Yes. Well, you know, this is important, and this is incredible. We talk about this here. The Fed says repo operations are now going to last into the second quarter of 2020. Remember, it was just supposed to go to yesterday, October 10th. And here it is now, 2020. The Federal Reserve has announced it's going to be continuing its overnight funding operations through at least January, and will start buying Treasury bills next week through the second quarter of 2020. The T-bill purchases will be large, $60 billion in the first month, despite Fed officials' insistence that the operation will be an organic move to grow the central bank's balance sheet and the level of bank reserves, as well as to keep the benchmark funds rate within its targeted range. And the purchases are going to involve maturities between 5 and 52 weeks. And, of course, following a disruption in short-term lending markets in mid-September, we saw these interest rates soaring, and we saw the Fed began conducting their own repurchase agreements or repos. And this is operations to provide financial institutions with cash in exchange for ultra-safe assets like government bonds.
You know, this announcement comes after Jerome Powell also said that the Fed's going to be expanding the size of its $4 trillion balance sheet through further short-term T-bill purchases. Now, the Fed officials, I'm not sure if those were the Fed presidents or if that was the Open Market Committee. I believe it's probably the presidents, met by video conference last Friday to talk about issues related to the recent pressures in money markets that Melody just referred to. Documents from the Fed state the overnight repo operations, at least through January, will be, and we already mentioned that, will be buying T-bills into the second quarter of next year. Now, with respect to the latter operation, the buying T-bills, Powell's been adamant in pointing out that they're aimed at expanding the Fed's balance sheet and correspondingly bank reserves. However, he said it should not be confused with the quantitative easing that occurred during and after the financial crisis. Melody, excuse the expression, gag me with a spoon.
Oh, no, don't be confused. This is not quantitative easing. Under quantitative easing, the Fed sought to lower long-term rates and push the appetite for risk assets. The balance sheet expansion will be organic and will be targeted as making sure bank reserves are plentiful and that the Fed's benchmark overnight borrowing rate stays within the targeted range. You know, Dave, you're going to write about this and some related issues in this weekly blog that goes out tonight that we mentioned earlier. And listeners, you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter and blog at the dgscoins.com. And, you know, it's kind of like the definition of is, right?
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be.
Yes, whatever we say it is. It is not quantitative easing this time. It's ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh.
737. I'm going to be flying soon, and I made sure that the planes that I was ticketed for were not 737 Maxes or even 737s. I don't even want to go on a plane at all, so it's surely not going to be on 737.
Market uncertainty is bad enough, Melody. We don't need to be wondering whether you're flying in.
But you know what's interesting? This brings me up a point. I'm going to try to get her on the program, Dave. Sherry Peterson. She's a pardon?
Why does that name ring a bell?
Sherry Peterson is she wrote a book, The View from 13F, and she was on the flight and survived 8/11. And this was the flight out of Honolulu where the cargo door was ripped open, and the seat that she was assigned to when she had boarded the plane, she had a ticket for, oh, I forget, row F, 13F, and there was somebody sitting in there, and he had a ticket for 13F. So she kindly said, "Will you stay in there?" Because he seemed a little irritated, and she moved to the seat behind him. And when the cargo door blew open, it also pulled out all those seats up, and including the F-13.
Jeez.
And she was behind that. And so she was saved, and they were able to bring the plane down. And, you know, it was that happened in 1989, February 24th. And, you know, it is it's really a very interesting book. She does a great job. She takes us through her early life, which kind of sets the stage for her story of survival. And I think 9 or 10 people were sucked out of the plane, but they were able to, you know. So, and I hope to have her on the program. So maybe we can get her on the program when you're on the show. So,
that'd be great.
But it was just released. She sent me a copy of it, and she signed a "What a Ride," right?
Yes. Indeed.
So something you don't want to read right before you fly. But anyway, we're talking about the 737. And how Boeing has failed to adequately explain to the regulators how a new automated system contributed to 2 crashes. I think it was just last year, the year before. And the Federal Aviation Administration lacked the capability to effectively analyze much of what Boeing did share about this new plane. And among the findings in a critical report from a multi-agency task force, the FAA convened to scrutinize the MAX's certification process after a second plane crashed in March. Was that just this year, March? Boy, it seems
October and this March. Yeah,
wow, it seems longer, I know. But the review scope was narrow. It only scrutinized the FAA certification of the MAX's flight control system. And but that allowed the task force to review this certification of the new automated system. In each crash, pilots struggled as a single damaged sensor sent the plane into an irrecoverable nosedive within minutes right after the takeoff.
Oh, isn't that awful? You know, we know a total of 346 people were killed in those 2 crashes, and prompted regulators around the world to ground the MAX. Now, the report found that while the FAA had been made aware of this MCAS, the information and discussions about it were so fragmented and were delivered to disconnected groups that it was actually difficult to recognize the impacts and implications of this system. The task force said that it believed that if FAA technical staff had been fully aware of the details of MCAS, the agency would probably have required additional scrutiny of the system that might have identified that sensory flaw. Boeing is now updating the system to make it less powerful. It says it'll install a modified version when the MAX, which is still grounded, returns to service. Now, wait a second. I hope that's not true. I hope they don't we hope they install the modified version before it returns to service?
You'd hope. But you know what? I understand human error. But I look at this too. Is this human error or was it something a little more? I mean, you look at the opioid, and they knowingly sold product that knew was going to hurt people.
Sure.
Isn't this kind of the same thing?
Well, you hope not. That's you know, that's what I say. You hope not.
Well, I hope not too. But on the other hand, from the information that's all been released, isn't that kind of the direction they're going in?
Well, you know, I guess to a certain extent, I think it points out the flaws of processes and systems in place in some of our industries, whether it's government, whether it's corporation, you know, sometimes the relationships get too close and it takes away an independent sense of analysis. I wonder how much that contributed in this tragic case.
It is tragic. And what also is tragic is we're out of time.
Oh.
We'll be back on Monday, ladies and gentlemen. So please join us then. And until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye. Thank you.